Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 15th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, Saxby Chambliss says no deal is better than a bad deal at the WTO. And Chuck Grassley says that should clarify the U.S. position on the Doha round. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and then, just after the bottom of the hour, as we always do, we'll talk with the meteorologist. Today, Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us, won't you, for the next half hour as we bring you this edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat futures at 361.5 were up a quarter. September's were down a penny and a quarter at 376.5. Kansas wheat at July contract 464, up 3 cents for the day. July corn futures $2.33 a bushel, down 4 cents. September's off 4.5 at 244.5, and the December contract at 258.5, down 3.75. March contract 269.25, down 4.25. July soybean futures 592.5, they're up 3. August contract 599.5, up 3. And SEPs at 606.25, up 3.25. November bean 620.5, up 2.5. July bean meal futures at the end of the day, a settlement price at $179.10. They were down a dime. July bean oil at $24.82, off 05 for the day. Future cattle, August contract $112.35. They were up $2.92.5. June live cattle at $80.95 were up $2.72.5. And July lean hogs at $75.40 were up $2.50 for the day. From the outside market, crude oil at $69.57 a barrel, currently down 43 cents for the day. The CRB at $337.70, up $5.67. And the Dow at 10,974, up 157 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now by phone to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Todd.
Let's start with the good news rather than the bad news, and let's do that from the Mercantile Exchange, where futures were higher today.
Yeah, we've had a real fantastic type rally here in the meat complex, especially today, just sharply higher. I'm not too sure, you know, how big a volume it is. My indications are, though, that it would be fairly strong volume the way the market is performing here.
And then if you turn on that volume dime, earlier in the week, volume at the Chicago Board of Trade had been fairly light as corn futures continued to fall. Was that the same case today, or did things pick up?
I think things picked up today. We had some pretty good fun selling, I think. You know, the weather forecast, from the way I'm reading it, of course, these weather guys can change here tomorrow, but the weather forecasts at least give the Corn Belt some pretty good chances of rain here over the next 4 or 5 days. That added in with the private Infoma estimate looking for corn acres to be up a little more than 2 million from USDA's March estimate. That all kind of combined together and really put a lot of pressure on the corn market, because if the rains do materialize, one would expect that the good to excellent rating level would improve. We did have that 1 point decline there last week, but if these rains do materialize, you'd probably see that 1 point decline erase, and probably even see some advances in the corn crop.
And as you look at the charts, futures have moved sharply lower at this point. Are they low enough now, or is there still a bit of a downside yet?
Oh, I think there's more downside. When a market turns down, it's hard to get bearish enough, and when the market turns up, it's hard to get bullish enough. And we just turned the corn market down. So we got a long ways to go, I think, provided weather comes along. You know, it's kind of a weather market, but there's a long ways to go down.
And when you say a long ways, how far down do you see a long ways?
Well, you know, corn, you look at your weekly charts, look at your monthly charts, and it does say that you can, you know, gravitate back to the $2 level fairly easy. I mean, there's nothing in the charts to say you can't slip back to the $2 level over time, Todd.
And that's still a pretty steep decline, and farmers, I know, will be concerned, especially for those who have not made sales at this point, at least pre-sales. What are your suggestions?
Well, I think you have to, you know, determine what kind of, you know, risk you want to make. I think longer term, things might be okay, might pan out for everybody. But, you know, there is some downside risk in here. So I guess I would be inclined to tell people that they need to use rallies to, you know, kind of get some sales on the books. They have to kind of determine which level they want to be at. But you know, a lot of it all depends upon what kind of July weather you have, whether or not we did pick up some additional corn acres. That we won't know yet for another couple weeks. But one could map out a fairly bearish scenario. But on the other hand, if weather is not real good during July, things could change around in a hurry.
And if you have bins full of old crop corn?
You're in trouble.
Well,
you must not need the money, I guess. you know, basis levels, my guess is if the rains materialize and new crop prospects do improve, I would suspect that we would see a lot of activity of old crop corn coming to town, and I think you would probably see basis levels widen, and I think it could be, you know, fairly bearish situation, at least for a time. For a period of time, anyway.
Let's talk about this market. I know a couple of weeks ago we talked about the upside potential in the market, that things looked really quite good. And tell me how things have changed, at least for the old crop and maybe for through the fall of this year, I suppose, all the way into December. And what it is about the marketplace that in Chicago looks different today than it did 2 weeks ago.
Well, we don't know for sure if the fundamentals have changed. I think the market is anticipating that the rally that we saw during the March and April and May and on in here to early June, that the market accomplished its mission in corn, and what it did is brought additional acres into production. Now, the Infoma group says that they accomplished that mission, but they are just a firm that gave us a guess today. We'll get confirmation on that from USDA here in a couple weeks ago. So if you did change if you added a couple million acres, that adds 300 million bushels to production. There's some in the trade that believes that USDA is way too low on their harvested acres, that they're using an abnormally high percentage on unharvested, that you could probably pick up an extra million harvested there. There would be another 150 million bushels. So you could add, you know, 450 million bushels to the supply balance sheet fairly quickly if weather is favorable over the next 30 days, and if we did pick up, you know, additional 2 million acres. There's a general belief that USDA missed a lot of acres on that March report. We'll maybe get confirmation one way or the other. We're still got less corn planted than last year, but it wasn't as steep a decline possibly as what USDA indicated on the March report.
You know, the upside was not all that long after the March 31 report. The upside really didn't last that long. Do you think it was enough to really buy acres from farmers?
I think so. I think you bought additional acres during April and May.
But don't they already have that all insured, and can't they really can't change that at that point, can they?
Oh, sure, they can change. They can always add an extra 40 here and an extra 100 here. And I think a lot of it, what everybody's missing, the question is whether or not USDA was right on the money on the March numbers to start with. I personally think they were low to start with. Because if you remember right, a lot of people going into that report kind of thought that we would only see like a 2 million acre decline, more so than a 4 million acre decline, and USDA gave us that 4 million. Now, basically, that's what the Sparks numbers tells you, or the Infoma numbers, is that plantings is more in line with maybe what the trade was thinking last winter.
How about the bean market? What do you see there?
Bean market looks okay. There's nothing wildly bullish in it, but we continue to track sideways on the weekly chart. If you look at a weekly soybean chart, we're tracking sideways. We call that base building, waiting for an event of some kind to come along to trigger increased demand or, shorten up the supply. So we're kind of looking, you just kind of look at that sideways market, and I think, we'll get confirmation whether or not supplies are tightening again with the acres. I mean, the Sparks people suggest that bean acres may be down to 2.5 million from what USDA estimated in March, and that's a start of shaving off some of these big carryovers. That peels off 100 million bushels fairly quickly. And then, of course, we still have summer growing weather to go through. Expectations that, South America will plant a little smaller soybean acreage next year. That kind of, adds a little longer-term friendliness to the bean complex. And that even next year, soybean acres could drop further as farmers gear up to meet the ethanol demand for corn in the 07-08 crop year.
Sideways is what, 580 to 650? 660, I think.
Basically, we're in this 550 to $6 trading range if you look at a weekly chart, closes, lead futures closes above the $6 area, would begin to open up a path for soybeans to quickly rally to the 650 level, and then we kind of go from there.
I was looking at the lead option, or not the lead option, but the November contract at that point. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
That's about it, Todd.
All right. We appreciate it. Thanks much.
Okay.
And that is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Hi, this is AM580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. We know managing your farm operation is time-consuming, and sometimes you miss hearing our agricultural programming. But now you can get AM580 Ag delivered daily directly to your computer. You'll never miss a broadcast of the opening and closing market reports and Commodity Week again. Subscribing is easy. We've put instructions on our website at WILLAG.org. Look on our homepage for Subscribe to AM580 Podcasts. It's quick and easy, and you'll always be informed with timely market analysis. Drop by our website today, WILLAG.org.
At the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight's skies will be partly cloudy across the two-state region. Lows will range from 62 in eastern Indiana to around 70 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, mostly sunny skies. Highs tomorrow will range from 85 in northeastern Indiana to 93 in west central and southwestern part of Illinois. A quick update on the news for the day. The U.S. Congress did approve the Emergency Supplemental Appropriations Bill and forwarded that to the president's desk. It did not include the Senate-passed disaster aid assistance for America's farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss says Congress would be more likely to renew presidential trade negotiating authority if U.S. Trade Chief Susan Schwab walks away from a bad deal in the Doha round of trade talks. Yesterday, Chambliss told WTO Director General Pascal LeMay, in his words, there is no groundswell in Congress or farm country for a Doha round agreement. LeMay declined to comment on his discussions with U.S. officials and lobbying groups, but Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says LeMay should now have a firm idea of the U.S. position.
He is searching out points of view over here because it's coming a real critical time in the negotiations in Geneva, and he wants to know the leeway that American negotiators might have. He wants to hear it firsthand as opposed to hearing it through Susan Schwab and other people. And all I can say is he's getting very valuable information, but I'm not at liberty to disclose what that is.
Chambliss also made news yesterday in announcing that he and Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Tom Harkin are considering action to stop the Bush administration from a USDA plan that would increase Farm Service Agency loan fees to the nation's lowest income farmers. Yesterday, a Senate Oversight Committee took testimony on the issue. The House has passed an amendment that would stop the Bush administration from requiring Cuba to pay for U.S. products before they leave U.S. ports. Last year, the Treasury Department changed its interpretation of the rule, requiring cash before shipment rather than on delivery. The amendment has yet to be taken up by the Senate. U.S. beef industry officials say they'll take a wait-and-see attitude on whether new South Korea labeling rules will impact U.S. beef exports. Lynn Heinze is Vice President of Information for the U.S. Meat Export Federation.
We have to wait until we get back in the market to really see what the impact is going to be, but we've already been told by a number of restaurant owners, both large and small, that they're anxious to have our products back and are interested in featuring them. We've been told the same thing by a number of retailers, both large chains and some regional retailers.
Starting next January, large South Korean restaurants will have to tell their customers where their beef comes from. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association yesterday voted unanimously to support retaliatory trade sanctions against Japan for its continued ban on U.S. beef. Up to now, NCBA has opposed retaliatory action. NCBA also called for the U.S. to close its border to Japanese beef until the Japan border is reopened to American beef. And soybean rust has been found in Miller County, Georgia. That's in the southwest part of the state. Sentinel plots in Georgia are now in the V6, V7 stage, and some are in the R1 bloom stage. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. And Saturday morning's Commodity Week, you can tune into that program at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Well, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says a million just isn't what it used to be.
There is a scene in the first Austin Powers movie where the villain, Dr. Evil, who has been frozen for the last 30 years, squints his eyes, puts his pinky to his mouth, and demands $1 million for not destroying the world. That gag gets a lot of laughs, because everyone knows that $1 million isn't nearly as much money as it was 30 years ago. After Evil's assistants give him a lesson in inflation, he ups his demand. Most of us would be thrilled to have $1 million. That's still a lot of dough. But some farmers whose assets are worth $1 million or more know they don't, in fact, have that kind of money. Their worth is tied up in land, land that has inflated in value since they or their parents or grandparents bought it 30 or more years ago. If they live near an expanding metropolitan area, the land value may have increased even more because of intense competition by developers. Even if farmers are millionaires in land value only, their heirs could be forced to pay estate taxes as if they were Bill Gates. The top estate tax rate will rise to 55% on a $1 million estate in the year 2011, unless Congress repeals the tax before then. If farm heirs don't have that much cash or stocks lying around, they may have to sell at least some of their land or assets to pay the tax. The result is fewer acres of farmland and more development. The irony of the situation is that some of the same politicians who oppose killing the death tax for good also claim to be environmentalists and bemoan the loss of open space. This scenario is playing out on a farm near Washington, D.C., one of the few that remain in the area. It soon will be turned into a huge development of homes, offices, and stores. The heir to the farm has said the amount he has to pay in death taxes is one reason he is selling the land to a developer. If the estate tax is aimed at breaking up rich estates and redistributing wealth, it's failing miserably. A recent congressional report finds that estates worth more than $20 million actually pay less estate tax than those in the $2.5 million or $5 million range. Most farmers have worked hard to build a successful farm, and they would like their kids and grandkids to keep it in agricultural production. With the death tax still on the books, that dream of keeping family farms going is less likely to become reality. At the same time, the government spends billions on conservation programs to protect the environment and wildlife habitat. It defeats its own goals by assessing a tax that induces landowners to sell to developers. It's time for Congress to recommit to the goal of preserving farmland and consider how eliminating the unfair and unbeneficial death tax could support that goal. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Bill Mayer joins us on this Wednesday afternoon from Roach Ag Marketing's Lexington office at the elevator to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me how well this week the basis in your area has been holding up.
Well, it's held up. Corn basis actually improved a little bit. I think as we see the futures drop here, continue to drop, we'll see the basis continue to improve some, although there's plenty of corn out here ready to move. One thing that's interesting we've kind of seen up in this area is it seems like the rail car availability has been pretty good, and part of that's probably going back to the wheat crop out west. They're probably going to store what wheat they have out there and don't need the cars to move it around. So, you know, in this Mexican market, the Southwest market, seems like the cars are pretty available right now.
Does that add a couple of cents to the basis?
Well, that helps, yeah. I mean, it keeps the transportation cost relatively lower compared to where they could be. A lot of years you see a lot of the rail cars move west whenever the wheat crop starts to come in. So I think that'll be an advantage this year, although it's not going to overwhelm the fact that we've got, you know, a lot of corn yet on hand out here.
Speaking of a lot of corn yet on hand, earlier in the program, Dan Zwicker talked about $2 corn. I suppose that's if conditions are good and we end up with an 80 million acre corn crop by the time we get to the end of the month of June and USDA comes out with that number. But it seems to me like it's still an awful long way until harvest time.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the summer's over yet, I guess I wouldn't say. I think we could come in fact, next week and have a completely different situation depending on what happens with some of the rains over the next 4 to 5 days here and how much the Western Belt really ends up getting. I think that's going to be a key. And I guess I expect that the volatility is going to continue here in the market.
And what are your bids for the day?
Talking about $2 corn, I guess on the old crop, we're at 205 tonight, 220 on new, 557 on old crop beans, 582 on new.
Bill, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joining us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Peter Levitt, meteorologist, about the agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan is in Urbana at this hour. She's delivering the commencement address to the 50th anniversary graduating class of the University of Illinois Police Training Institute. Earlier today, Madigan announced a $250,000 grant from the university's Discovery Farms Research Project. The grant will be used to develop technology for controlling odors at hog farms. The money comes from an antitrust settlement reached in 2000 with several vitamin manufacturers who were accused of price fixing. U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert denies he pushed for federal funding for a proposed highway in the Chicago suburbs so that he and his wife could reap more than $1.8 million from land deals in Kendall County. The Illinois congressman tells the Associated Press that the land he sold is more than 5 miles away from the route for the proposed Prairie Parkway. The Sunlight Foundation accused Hastert yesterday of not divulging how the $207 million earmark he won for the highway was tied for an investment he made in nearby land. A Vermilion County coroner's jury ruled yesterday that Christopher Gaston's death at a downtown Danville parking deck 2 months ago was an accident. The 17-year-old Gaston died when a stairwell he was using at the Walnut Street garage collapsed. Danville police say Gaston and two other teens had been throwing rocks at cars from atop the parking deck and ran when they thought they had hit a car. Only Gaston took the stairwell. Gaston's family is suing the city of Danville over the death. Lafayette, Indiana police say Chinese officials have charged a former Purdue graduate student with a murder they believe occurred in Lafayette. The dismembered body of Lei He was found last August in the trunk of a car at O'Hare Airport after his wife, Don Le Chun, flew home to China. A Rock Island County judge has agreed to hear arguments next month from media groups seeking the sealed medical records of Western Illinois Congressman Lane Evans, who is battling complications of Parkinson's disease. The Moline Dispatch, the Rock Island Argus, and the Associated Press alleged the judge improperly closed a hearing last week at which guardians were named to assist with the ailing Democrat's personal and financial affairs. I'm Jim Meadows. AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage on a Thursday afternoon. We're joined now by Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast across the Midwest and around the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start not here in the U.S., but with the Chinese corn crop. Of course, it's the second largest corn crop on the globe at about half the size of what is raised in the U.S. and runs pretty concurrently with our season. How are they faring?
Well, they've had dry weather in North China. Most of the corn is growing up in North China and up into Manchuria, where some of the soybean areas are as well. It's been dry across North China and up into Manchuria for the last few weeks, which is not unusual. The monsoon usually doesn't get underway up there until about June 20th or so, so they still have a little time. However, it has been dry. It has been hot. And except for some showers in Manchuria, which provided some relief, I think they're getting off to a dry start, which is to say a cool start there. The areas that they do grow down south have abundant precipitation from the Yangtze Valley on southward.
And then turn your attention to here in the United States and tell me about dry weather conditions that have plagued a portion of the U.S., including the Southwest, over the winter months, and then potentially how things are faring in the state of Iowa, parts of Nebraska, Missouri.
Okay, well, we do have drought from Texas northward now all the way up into South Dakota. It's been a severe drought. It's severely impacted the hard red winter wheat crop. And that crop is going to come in as a very poor crop this year. I still think the number has to go down some more because of the heat and the continued dryness. Now, this pattern that we're in has been extraordinarily persistent. The large-scale pattern aloft has featured a trough in the west, a trough in the east, and in between a ridge, which is mostly between the Rockies and the Western Plains. And the ridge means fair, warm, and dry weather, especially in the summertime. And there's a tendency for this expansion of the dryness to expand eastward. And so we see dryness entering the western Corn Belt, Nebraska first, and Iowa, Missouri, maybe even southern Minnesota will see dry weather, I think, as the season progresses. The eastern Corn Belt is a garden spot from Illinois on eastward. There's abundant moisture, so we don't see a problem there. But we do see the makings of a problem, especially if this pattern continues to persist and seasonally progresses eastward a bit I think we've got a problem for the Western Corn Belt.
Historically, if you look at droughts, how do they spread?
Well, they do spread that way. They start in the plains and expand during the summer months eastward as the long wave ridge grows and shifts northward with time. So we've seen the severe drought in Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, and now we're looking for it to work its way farther north into the Dakotas, Nebraska, and probably Iowa as well.
And we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Thanks much. Pete Levitt, as meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. Remember to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the markets on the pre-opening Commodity Market Report with your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. His name is Dave Dickey. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.